thought I was the bee's knees because I was walking into Capitol Radio to do this audition. I didn't think I could love anybody else because I love radio. I didn't think I could fall in love with the TV, and I did. Just because you can do TV doesn't mean to say you can do radio.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which we talk to those who made a difference. Peter Levy.
On the school bus every morning, I went to school in Cornwall, and I went to secondary school, and I lived out in the sticks, and the journey into Truro took 45 minutes, and I was on a coach every single morning, and I had what was, well, we called them transistor radios in those days. You know, it was a little Bakelite radio that if you wedged between the edge of the coach seat and the window, you got a perfect signal going in, because we didn't have mobile phones or, you know, Walkmans or anything like that. And I listened every morning to Tony Blackburn.
Tell you what, I want you particularly to look upon the show as your own. If you've got anybody you want to say hello to before you go to work in the morning, then this is all you have to do. Very, very simple. Just write to Tony Blackburn, P.O. Box 1AA. Have you got that?
And I just loved radio. And I was obsessed from then, when I was like 11, 12, going into to work, and I used to be able to sing the jingles, and I used to be able to know all the catchphrases and everything. And that's where my love of radio started. I didn't take part in any programmes. I was just a very avid listener. And then in the evenings, you know, under the bed covers with Fab 208 and Radio Luxembourg from the Grand Duchy, I was a keen listener. I loved it. I had a reel-to-reel tape recorder when I was... must have been 10 or 11, and I used to wire up speakers and pipe them around the house and everything. So it was desperately sad, but I can see when I look back now at where the love of it came from. And I was also fascinated by, at a very young age, the regional news on the TV. I used to watch every night.
That's the news. Now the West Country weather summary. Tomorrow will be mainly cloudy with outbreaks of thundery rain.
I used to watch every single night. Well, when I look back now, the clues were there. As far as school is concerned, I was not good. I failed my 11 plus. I went to secondary school and was never, ever academic. But was always fascinated by the TV, always fascinated by the radio. I had a tape recorder, aux out, and I bought old speakers from shops and from wireless news, and I knew how to get sound from the tape recorder to somewhere else. Much later, when I moved to London, my mum and dad split up. I moved with my dad, went to live in London, and then I was in my teens and started working. And then I would make a radio program on my tape recorder. By this point, I'm talking about when I was 17, I'd got an Akai reel-to-reel tape recorder. I'd gone high-tech, you know, none of the fidelity. And I then could do sound, and I used to make radio programs. And my dad worked in the Daily Telegraph in Fleet Street, and he didn't used to come home to 11:30 at night. I'd already gone to bed. And I used to leave this out for him to listen to. And he would tell me the next day what he thought was good about it. When I look back, it was extraordinary. But at that same time, I was in my teens. I was sending off these, what must have been horrific tapes, you know, to the new commercial radio stations, because commercial radio was being born. There were some stations already on the air, and so there were some new stations coming along. As I say, mum and dad split up. I went to live with my dad in London. My sister stayed in Cornwall with my mum. And I couldn't do anything. Academically, I'd left school, and I was in my teens. So I picked up little bits of acting jobs. And although they weren't particularly great, some of them were just TV commercials. They paid the bills, and I was able to live. And as long as I could go to Wardour Street and buy my reel-to-reel tapes and get any tapes that I needed for my tape recorder, I was quite happy. And I did some bizarre jobs, but I did get small parts. We're not talking about big parts, we're talking about small parts, but I did. Dixon of Dock Green, Man About the House, all these 70s stable of programmes. And I did loads of them. I mean, I really did loads of them over a 2-year period. But I used to do that during the day. And although I enjoyed it, when I came home, that was to pay the bills. When I came home, out came the tape recorder, and I carried on with the radio. The first step was I would send these little tapes off to these radio stations. around the country, and I hadn't been around the UK, so the different places. And most of them I never heard another word from. But I sent a tape off to Pennine Radio, which was a new radio station, which is going to be for Bradford. I'd never heard of the Pennines, I'd never been to Yorkshire, so I didn't know anything about it, but I sent it off. I got this phone call from what I thought was a foreign gentleman, but it wasn't. It was Austin Mitchell, who was very strong Yorkshire accent, which I'd not heard before. And what he was saying to me was, would you be able to come to Capital Radio in London on Saturday for an audition? We've got your tape and we'd like you to come along to Capital Radio. So off I went, and I knew where Capital was because I lived and breathed radio. So off I went, thought I was the bee's knees because I was walking into Capital Radio to do this audition. And he said, there you are, sit down. And he said, there's a pile of records, some dedications here, just, you know. And there were, the records were there, the cartridges were there and everything. I had never touched this equipment in my life. And I had to be honest and said, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do. He said, oh, you'll be fine. Just I'll put the microphone on, just talk. And that's what I did. It was embarrassing because I couldn't play the records. I'd never queued a record up. I'd never played a cartridge. I never played a jingle. They didn't interview me. They didn't want to know anything about me. They wanted me to read these dedications and letters out, which I did. And of course, there were catches in there. The town of Keighley, which of course I called Keeley. And they must have thought, you know, an idiot. Anyway, I left. It was a boiling hot day. It was 1975, the summer of July. And I thought, oh, this has gone so badly. Anyway, I left them and went home and sat outside in the sun thinking, this was my one chance and I've just blown it. Anyway, two or three days later, I got a phone call and it was, we'd like you to come and join us when we go on the air. The on-air date will probably be about September, and move to Bradford. And it was like, wow, and that was it. And it was thanks to Austin Mitchell and his wife, Linda, who initially had heard my tape and said, he's got something. And she cajoled Austin into inviting me. But it was about the fact that it was just somebody who was, I think, just ordinary and didn't have the, and all the rest of it. And I must have just, it was probably the luckiest day of my life. And, you know, I wish I could hear it. You know, I wish I could hear it. That would be fantastic. But of course, I speak like a Southern Jesse, you know. And here I was going to, you know, the wool town of Bradford. Anyway, I was really excited. And my dad came back from work and I said, I've got a job. I said, I'm moving. I'm going to Bradford. And he thought, what have I brought up here? What have I brought up, you know? And off I went to Bradford, and that was it, 1975.
Good morning, this is Pennine Radio. It's 6 o'clock, time for the news. This is Stephen Harris reporting. First, there's grim news for the steel industry.
Well, we went on the air on September the 16th, and I moved to Bradford to a grotty little bedsit about 6 weeks before. And my first shows, bear in mind that I was alongside other radio stalwarts like Stuart Francis, I was the junior, and I had a show Saturday night, 10 p.m, Sunday night, 10 p.m, and also Sunday afternoon. And those were my first shows, and I stayed on that for about 6 weeks. And commercial radio in those days was a bit of a bloodbath. And after 6 weeks, I was moved to the morning show, and that was it. So for the first 6 weeks, the morning show person was moved, and there was, you know, kerfuffle and change round. Usual commercial radio thing in those days, you know, they would say, we're going to bring in this amount of people, you know, and it didn't happen, or this amount of advertising. Anyway, wheels within wheels. I only did 6 weeks doing the late shows on a Saturday and Sunday, and then I was on in the daytime, and that was it. And I motored, I loved it from the start, I loved Bradford from the start. I couldn't have been happier. And I just went from strength to strength and was very, very lucky with that.
Peter Levy.
Pennine was extraordinary because it was my first job, so I still was a little bit... I couldn't believe I was there to start off with. I couldn't believe that I had landed the dream job for me, working in a radio station. So I still looked on at these other people in awe. And we had somebody called Julius K. Scragg, who was, you know, probably mad, you know, a genius broadcaster, but bonkers. Roger Kirk, who had been around for many years. Stuart Francis later went on to be program controller of Heriwood Radio and did great things. And there was me, and I just loved it. But something happened that I got on very, very well with the audience, and the show took off. And although I only did what turned out to be about 4.5 years before I left, it felt like I'd been there a long time, and my heart was in Bradford, and in a lot of ways still is, because it had a very special meaning, and I loved it. But yes, and you know, I used to go to playlist meetings where we used to, you know, all sit round the presenters, everybody together, and put a new single on and listen to it. You know, is it going to be the Peter Levy hit pick of the week, or is it going to be somebody else's? They'd be fighting over the records. It's funny, but when we used to play them through, I always used to pick out things that just never did anything. And then there was this record, Superman. It was female voices. It was called Superman. Da, 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 da. Anyway, whoever it was, they recorded a special jingle for me. And it was Superman, Peter Levy's a Superman. And they recorded this. And of course, it got endless plays just because I had this bloody jingle. Superman. And that's the one I do remember, thinking I got a jingle out of this. And in those days, of course, you know, of course, it's plugging a record. But it just went. That's what happened. I absolutely loved it. And at that time, I was 19 when we went on the air. The everybody else was a lot older than me. And at that age, you don't realise just, A, how lucky you are, but also how perilous the career is. And it could have only lasted a few months or whatever. And you don't think about that. You know, I lived and breathed doing the radio, but I didn't realise the enormity of it and how it could go horribly wrong. Little did I know that it would last so many years.
Only £9.95 I paid for a 74 Hunter GL. Goes like a bird. And Ronnie Aykroyd picked up a 1600cc 71 Cortina for only £5.95. Four-door job too.
In those days, there was lots of garages advertising and furniture warehouses and everything. And commercial radio in those days, I suppose in a lot of ways it probably hasn't changed that much, but you know, we can get you the morning show coming live from your furniture warehouse or whatever, or you know, from your furniture shop. I remember doing them from Morrison's in Bradford, Morrison's head office in Halifax, the department store there. And somehow you just knew from people that the show was working and you were working. That sounds really arrogant. I don't mean it like that, but it was just, I felt a connection with people, as I still do, and I loved that, and I got more kicks out of that than anything else. I wasn't technically brilliant at doing the radio. I never have been. I got by, but I wasn't brilliant. I never had the love of music that a lot of people have. I knew my stuff, and I still do, 60s and 70s when I was starting. But I wasn't, you know, a music aficionado. Couldn't have told you all the record labels knew, you know, all the years and everything. But I did enjoy connecting with the audience. I did enjoy doing something that they enjoyed, or they laughed at, or they cried at. At that time, postcards were the thing. You know, send us a postcard, you know, answers on a postcard. We had the phones, we had the key and lamps, you know, six lights, and... You know, you do a competition or you do something and you get six lights and you say, oh, this is really popular. You know, no, it means you've got six people listening. And that was it. We didn't have any of the stuff we had today. I can remember the days when somebody used to say, oh, so-and-so is very popular. You should see their mail. You know, you should see how many letters they've got in their pigeonhole. You know, they've got six letters. They're really popular. It was totally, totally different. And I think it was probably as misguided then as it is today in terms of response. You know, you can't gauge like that. But I think you can when you talk to people and when they say either, I found that really interesting or really registered with me. And those years at Pennine, before they came to an end, were very, very happy. And I learned so much. I was very, very happy. I was doing the morning show. I lived in a lovely little village near Bingley, and everything was going great. And then I got this phone call from Radio City in Liverpool. Radio City, I mean, the big stations at that time, Capital, Clyde, City, BRMB. And I got this call from Radio City. Would I send them a tape? So I sent them a tape. Didn't think too much about it because A, I didn't want to move because I was very happy at Pennine, and also Radio City was like God, you know, there was no way I was going to go there and get a job there. But I got an invite to go over and meet David Maker. And David Maker was the programme controller, Terry Smith was the managing director, and they were very, very big in the radio world at the time. And sat down with David Maker, had a little chat. It wasn't even a proper interview or whatever. And he said, you'll be great. You're just what we're looking for. The show is 2 to 6 every afternoon. I'm thinking, 4-hour show? I haven't done a 4-hour show. And on one of the biggest stations in the UK, I just couldn't believe it. Anyway, I accepted it, and I had to go back to Pennine sadly and say I was going, which they were lovely about. They were obviously disappointed because it was going well. And that was it. A few weeks later, I left Pennine on the Friday, and I turned up to Radio City in Liverpool on the Monday morning, which was interesting because I'd had no break, I didn't know Liverpool, and I turned up and Billy Butler was on the radio.
And we go into Thursday, for Bet You Don't Know Who This Is, with a very, very important clue on Thursday, so I'll give you a big lead to who it might be. Thursday is the next day, I'm off tomorrow and Wednesday.
Anyone who knows Billy Butler, again, a broadcasting god, and he's going strong today and was going strong then. And these days he's on Radio Merseyside. And I could hear Billy on the speaker in the office. Right here. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? You know, they're not going to want to hear me. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified, really, really nervous. Anyway, he was on 11 till 2, and I went down about 10 to 2. And it was a completely different world because it was a big building. There were big stars that you saw regularly. I had a producer of the show. Never had a producer at Pennine. You know, the producer looked after everything. You know, if you did an interview, he would top and tail it. And it was completely different. And they looked after me very well. And I went down to do this handover, 10 to 2 on the first day. And Billy Butler pasted me to the wall, took the mickey out of me mercifully. Absolutely, you know, just killed me. Anyway, I fought my corner and all the rest of it. I now know what he was doing. He was just knocking the nerves out of me and made me fight back. And it was the biggest favour he could do because I started the programme and I got through it and settled down there very well. And there was a lovely team of people there. And everywhere you went in town, they were playing Radio City. And then that's when I realised that Pennine was successful. But this is real success as far as radio is concerned. It was extraordinary.
At daylight, the police began a series of charges to break up the gangs massed in front of them.
But as the and I had 2 years at Radio City and lived through the Toxteth riots. I had a flat in Ullett Road and I could see the Toxteth riots out my window, and I could see them at the same time on my portable telly and my digs on the 9, as it was then, the 9 o'clock news.
He got out of the taxi in which he was travelling. He was approached by a man. This man apparently wanted an autograph. There was an altercation with Lennon, and then Lennon was shot several times.
I went to shave one morning and put the radio on, Radio City News, and John Lennon had been shot. I hadn't realised at that point just how big this was going to be later in the day. And I walked into the radio station and the world's press were there. and I literally mean the world's press camera crews from, and I went to do the programme in the afternoon, and we took phone calls from grown men in Liverpool crying, and we had film crews from the States, Australia, everywhere. It was just an extraordinary day. There's a place that I know, make a day with music on the Peter Levy Show. The thing that I will always be grateful to David Maker for was I'd gone from a small station, yes, a successful station, but I hadn't even gone to the middle ground, I'd gone straight to the top. And they listened, they gave you feedback, they not criticised in a nasty way, but they told you what's what. And I learnt so much. And in Liverpool, they're unforgiving. It's a little bit like Hull, really. You know, they don't miss a trick. So you learn fast. And I thought when I arrived that I knew what I was doing as far as radio was concerned. Well, I didn't really. I'd only done 4.5 years or whatever. But at Radio City, you learn very, very quickly. And because they give you producers, and because there's people around that are very experienced, you draw on their what they tell you, and they give you proper briefings on interviews. They make you do something again if you're pre-recording something and it's not right. It was extraordinary. And everywhere you went, you know, and suddenly Peter Levy in Liverpool, for that time that I was there, was a known name. And the people, again, a little bit like Hull, port mentality, I think. And this is when Liverpool had lots of problems, not like it is. It's very glamorous and very smart and all the rest of it today. We were on Stanley Street, just round the corner from the Cavern. Very, very different in those days, but extraordinary radio station, extraordinary. We. The next step was a call from Radio Air, which was being set up in Leeds. We'd got just, can't remember exactly how many commercial radio stations we got at this point, but there was a lot of them. And then there was some more being set up, and Leeds was going to be a big one because Leeds is a big city station. And I was known in West Yorkshire because of Pennine, and there's a big lap-over area. So obviously it was a good idea to approach me in so much as you'd done commercial radio, you were proven in a way, you worked for a big station, and you knew West Yorkshire. So I was offered a job on Radio Air. And again, you know, I was very, very happy at Radio City, but the thought of going to a brand new station from day one, which I'd already done once with Pennine, but the thought it was could happen a second time in my beloved Yorkshire. And even when I was at Radio City, I kept my house on in Bingley, and I used to go back every weekend.
4 minutes past 6 on The Breakfast Show with Graham. That's Charlie Dore and Pilot of the Airways. It's Tuesday, the 1st of September, 1981.
It was a difficult time because Radio City gave me a hard time and held me to a contract to work out. So it was hard. And then when Radio Air started, It was like commercial radio in those days. It was quite a turbulent start for many reasons. You know, we had some days when, or some weeks when, nobody was quite sure if they were going to get paid at all. You know, it was quite hard. You know, it was a difficult birth, and I can't remember all the ins and outs, but there were some difficult days. But we survived. But it was very, very exciting. And actually, in the end, David Maker, who I've already talked about from Radio City. By this time, he was running Red Rose Radio in Preston, and they bought out Radio Air. And he rang me up one day and he said, you thought you got away from me, but, you know, I'm back, and made it very, very successful. It was a fantastic place. I mean, Radio Air was, you know, you had James Whale doing The Late Show, and that used to be on the TV, so he had the TV cameras in his studio.
If you are easily offended and shocked, I'm warning you now, turn the radio off.
You had a mixture of characters. God bless him, he died way too young. Peter Tate, who was a brilliant broadcaster, a lovely guy. I used to get on extremely well with Peter Tate. And it was, I was absolutely so, so upset when he lost his life. And he was a character as well.
Prefab Sprout, they've got a great new album which is doing very well for them. And from it comes that single, and it's King of Rock and Roll. And he had it right here, Radio A. Have a look at that pop quiz.
We had various managers that, and program controllers. It got through a few, and we used to take the mickey out of them and all the rest of it. And I stayed there, and I stayed there, and I was there from, well, we went on the air in September 81. I didn't leave until 87. I'd done some good things in my time there. I don't mean that arrogantly, but we'd raised a lot of money for the local hospital to build a bungalow for parents who were far away from home and they had poorly babies and wanted to stay in a proper accommodation. Did lots of things like that. It was a very, very good radio station. Every Christmas an appeal, which raised a lot of money. And the atmosphere was fantastic. It was a very, very happy place. And when you think about the number of people that worked there that went on to great things, you know, Mark Mardell, big in BBC now. Chris Strachroyd went on to do TV. Helen Thomas was in the newsroom. She's now the head of the BBC in the Yorkshire and the Humber area in Lincolnshire. Again, a big name. Dee Marshall, Chris Kiddy, calendar reporter. As I mentioned, James Whale. We had endless people that went on to big things. It was a very, very good training ground. Alex Lester, I mentioned everything else. Alex Lester used to do the afternoon show. So we had me in the morning, Peter Tate breakfast, me in mid-morning. Alex did the afternoon, and he's still with the BBC, still going strong.
Radio Air, Peter Levy.
Radio Air was very happy. I had a hideous car that was sign-written. Peter Levy, Salford Car Hire, or wherever it was from. And I was very happy. I had a lovely life. Adored Radio Air. And was doing well, if that doesn't sound arrogant. And then one day I got this phone call. I come off the air at 12 o'clock, and I got this phone call from a gentleman, I suppose we can name him, called Jeff Talbot, who was running Radio Leeds. Well, and again, without being horrible, in commercial radio, you know, BBC local radio, well, we didn't even regard it as competition. It was just, it was people, radio for old people, and it wasn't on the radar. And Jeff Talbot worked at the BBC. He was the programme organiser of Radio Leeds, and he wanted to meet me. And I went to lunch with him, and he said, what we're trying to do is bring the age of our audience down. We'd like you to join us at Radio Leeds. And I said, oh, really? I said, well, that's very kind. Let me think about it and all the rest of it. And I wasn't really taking it very, I don't think, as seriously as I should have done. And I thought about it over the weekend, and I chatted with my partner about it. And there was something, obviously, inside me that knew that I couldn't go on playing music forever. And it was getting to the point where, in commercial radio, you had to play more music and play less talk and do less speech. And I was a speech person. I'd do long interviews and I'd do long bits and pieces. I'd do newsy stuff even then. I was always the one that, you know, you're not got you through your records. So I knew I was doing too much speech. The partner said, you cannot say no to the BBC. You cannot. It doesn't matter what it is. So I said, well, they're not paying me any more money and I'm going to have to buy myself a car and all the usual childish, ridiculous comments. But there was the offer of a job from the BBC. And Jeff Talbot was a lovely man. I got on very well with him. Anyway, got in touch with him on the Monday and said, right, you're on board. Because it was Radio Leeds and because I was at Radio Air, it made the front page of the paper. You know, Peter goes downtown or whatever the headline was, you know, walks out, you know, disloyal, goes to the opposition. So I lived through all that anyway. And people at Radio Air just laughed. You know, it was fine. And I started at Radio Leeds. And the show that I was doing was 11 till 2. That was the show that they gave me. But what you have to remember is that this was 1987. From 1975, I had only known commercial radio and the way commercial radio does things or doesn't do things. I'd not known the BBC and its rules and its regulations and its, you know, we don't do this here, Peter, or we do this here, Peter. And I'd started and they sent me away on an induction course in London and I had to get newspapers and I had to, you have a team of three or four people on them. It was difficult to start off with because I was used to making all the decisions about what I was going to do, how I was going to do it, and I don't need permission to do that. In the BBC it was very different. So, and I had a producer, the legendary John Cundy, who works for Look North still to this day, who was a great guy and was fantastic, but he had to deal with this young whippersnapper from commercial radio. And if I'm honest, the first few months were difficult because I was used to doing things my own way, and the BBC did them different. And it took me a while to adapt and lose the commercial radio. Anything goes, doesn't matter about the consequences. You know, we've got to get bums on seats and all the rest of it. And it was another learning curve, nearly as big as when I went to Radio City, or almost as big, to learn a new way of doing things. And I'm not talking about the fact that the faders, I'd done 1 year of the faders being this way towards you for being off and push open. I come to the BBC and they put them in the wrong way around. You know, it's the other way around. And I thought, this is going to take me forever to get used to this. But we got there in the end. There were some days when I first started when I thought, you know, they don't like me because they think I'm a commercial radio riffraff that brought in, and they're not. They do it properly.
Joan, morning.
Good morning, Peter.
How are you, Joan?
I'm very well, thank you. Are you?
Good, yes, not too bad. Yeah.
But it didn't take too long. But it was a difficult transition because I'd had 12 years of, I was still only, you know, early 30s, but I'd only had commercial radio, and I needed to learn a new set of rules. And now I don't know anything. You know, I've got BBC going through my veins because I've been doing it for so many years. And once I started at Radio Leeds, and once I got started, it really, really worked for me. And I absolutely loved it. And I saw some of the other shows copy some of the things I'd done and my way of working. Not in a smug way, but it sort of broke the ice. You know, it was... Yeah, we can do that. It's okay. It's okay to laugh. It's, you know, laughing is not a crime. It had all been very, very serious before then, and everything had been very po-faced. And suddenly I come in and laugh, take the mickey out of people. And it changed things. And then I went on to have many years with Radio Leeds, which were, you know, very, very enjoyable. And I worked with some incredible people in that time.
Radio Leeds with Peter Levy.
I was just going about my business. I'd only been at less than a year since I started at Radio Leeds, 1987. I started in January. I did my first Look North in the September, if you can believe that. And what happened was Judith Stamper, who presented Look North at that time, legendary Judith Stamper, had said to the editor one day, they were short of somebody to read the breakfast bulletins. And she said, oh, there's a chap in Radio Leeds, he's just joined, and he always wears a tie, which I did. Even though I worked on radio, I always wore a tie. And this registered with her, the fact that I worked in radio and had a tie on, and the editor at the time said, oh, well, you know, we must meet him. And he rang me up and asked me to go round, and he showed me the TV studio. He said, oh, no, he said, I'll show you the TV studio. He said, just want you to read. They only take 2 minute, they're 2 minute bulletins in at breakfast time and all the rest of it. So I said, well, I've never done anything like this before. So he said, oh, you'll be fine. And he showed me the studio, and we went into the TV studio, and it was a self-drive studio, like a radio desk with a fader on it and a key and switch and all the rest of it. So he said, you vision mix that, and you press the buttons while you're reading the news, and you look at the camera at the same time, but the camera doesn't show the hands doing that. So I said, oh, no. I said, I can't do that. It's not for me. So I said, no. He said, you'll be fine. I said, no. I said, you know, I'm quite happy. I've got enough on my plate with a three-hour radio show without coming in and doing this in the morning. Anyway, I had a go, and I loved it right from day one.
You're watching BBC One in the North. Now, the lunchtime news with Peter Levy.
School league tables, Yorkshire's officially bottom of the class.
I did more and more. I used to do the breakfast, then I'd do lunchtime, and sometimes I'd do the afternoon. We used to have a bulletin in those days in the middle of the afternoon on BBC Two, and then we had the 9:25, which is now the 10:30 news. And I was doing them all, and that went on for many years whilst doing the radio at the same time. So I was the first, well, in those days they called it, the first bimedia person that was doing radio and TV. And the BBC were fantastic because they bought into it, and we could see straight away how this really works, because one trails the other and the other trails the other. And to this day, I still back and support radio, radio full stop, because I'm in the sometimes in the privileged position of being able to give a plug on BBC One to a big audience.
I'm saved by Armstrong!
Premiership and Football League coverage every Saturday on BBC Local Radio.
And I remember when I was at Radio Air, we used to have something like The Appeal, and you got in touch with Yorkshire Television and said, you know, is there any chance of a plug on Calendar or at the end of Calendar? Oh, we'll try. Never got anything. One night we got a 5-second slide, came up and it said Radio Air. Tomorrow, their Christmas Appeal, blah, 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 blah. And it went very quickly like that. And we thought the next day that we'd hit the big time. And now you're in the position to be able to help radio by giving a little plug, and it means a lot. So I was doing radio and then TV in the later in the day, or depending if it might have been the radio first and TV later, or TV, and it was a bi-media role. And we were in two separate buildings in those days, next to each other. So I used to have to run outside in the fresh air to go from one to the other. So it was quite fascinating. But it was the early days, and I loved doing the TV, and I felt totally at home in the TV studio environment. And then I thought, oh, this is awkward. It's a little bit like, you know, you're married and then you find a lover and you think, I like the lover as well. And I want both. And I thought, I didn't think I could love anybody else because I love radio. I didn't think I could fall in love with the TV. And I did. So I was lucky enough to be able to continue to do the both. And I was at Radio Leeds doing that and doing Look North in Leeds from 1987 to 2002. So it was a lot of years.
Thank you very much indeed for watching over the last 15 years at Lunchtimes, and I'll see you again very, very soon. Thank you very
much. What happened in 2002 was Greg Dyke had come over to Leeds on a visit, and he wanted to see part of the TV region. Now, the TV region goes from Bridlington down to King's Lynn, across to Huddersfield, borders of Manchester. It's a very big area. And Greg Dyke was driving to have a look at Hull, and he was in the car ages with the boss, and he said, this is too big to be regional telly. And they decided to split the region in half. So you would have a separate programme that covered East Yorkshire and Lincolnshire, and then another programme that would cover South Yorkshire, West Yorkshire, North Yorkshire. And it was the first time in many, many years that the BBC decided to create a new region. And they built the building that we're in now from scratch. And I was asked if I would come and present Look North for East Yorkshire and Lincolnshire after having done many years doing Look North on the other side. So again, a little bit like the turnaround from City from Pennine to City, I finished in Leeds doing a show over there and then started over here and set up a brand new TV region. So again, you were with something from day one. I was the first person to present the programme from here with a brand new TV region. And that was extremely scary because there was a lot of pressure on. I remember on the first day, and we're talking about November 2002, cold, wet day, I was terrified. We'd had a week of practices and pilots, which hadn't, you know, everything went wrong but could go wrong. And it was the Monday, it was the very first show. And a dispatch rider arrived on a motorbike outside the building here, all the way from London, with a postcard from Greg Dyke that says, good luck, I'm sure it'll go well. Thinking, no pressure then. And it did, and it took off, and it worked very well. But it's very interesting how somebody with his sort of vision. I mean, there's certain people that I have met in my career in radio and TV that stand out as landmark people on their vision and their creativity. Colin Philpott was somebody who was in Leeds as a boss. He's no longer with the BBC. Helen Thomas, who was in Hull. Those two beacons of creativity and being what I call ahead of the curve. You know, like Helen's always, she's always there in advance. Greg Dyke was that as well, there in advance. Going back to the old days, David Maker and Terry Smith at Radio City. Terry Smith was light years ahead in radio on what we should be doing. And these people stick out in my mind as people who have got such a vision of how radio and TV should be. And I am so lucky that those people have not only looked after me, but hopefully I have been lucky enough to work with them, who I've seen as such creative leaders and such people with great vision for both radio and TV. Going back to that early day audition at Capital for the Pennine job, I think if you talk and you talk normally, not in cliches, not in gobbledygook, but if you just talk to people, I think they get that. Although I have been lucky on the TV, I've only been lucky on the TV because of the years of radio beforehand, even to the, you know, little things like being able to talk and fill a gap or fill. Radio teaches you that. You don't realise it at the time, but it teaches you that. But I think, yes, just talking to people. And even to this day, people in this building, I drive mad when, you know, I cross out and say, you know, we're not saying this, we're not saying that, because they're either cliches or they're expressions that journalists use, but real people don't use. And it's, you know, again, there's people along the way that have told me these things, you know, don't say blaze. People don't say there's a blaze over there, there's a fire over there, but we say, journalists like to say blaze, and these cliches, and I drive people mad here saying, no, I'm not saying that, that's a, my expression here is that's a banned word or a banned expression. Because if you talk to people in an ordinary way and you talk to them as if they're your friend, or as if, you know, it's my turn now to talk to you, then hopefully they can relate to you. And it doesn't matter whether you're being serious or doing something very heavy, or whether you're having a laugh. But if you're actually talking to them rather than about them or at them, hopefully it works. But I don't think you can analyse it. I don't think you can go into that. But otherwise, something obviously works for certain people, as you know yourself as an experienced radio person. You know, you can do it, and people who are listening to this who work in radio can do it. And the other thing that I've had over the years, I've worked with radio bosses who have been very keen. Say, Peter, I'm very keen to get person X to do a show at the weekends, you know, because they're on the TV. And I can think of five or six people, and they've got them in, and they've given them to me to look after. One of them was a big TV soap star and wanted to do a radio show. They were big on the TV, very popular, earned a lot of money, very famous, just couldn't do the radio. It just did not work. It was clunky. And I gave every single bit of advice. I drove the desk for them. I said, look at me when you're talking. Just think you're talking about me. Not, don't think you're talking to... Don't. You know, the first week this person came on and said hello to all of you out there, and it was all the things that, you know, you just wouldn't do. Just because you can do TV doesn't mean to say you can do radio, and just because you can do radio doesn't mean to say you can do TV. So there are some people who are very lucky if they can do both.
After one, can't wait to meet the rapper Professor Green, who spent a lot of time talking and singing about his inner demons. He joins us for What Makes Us Human.
Jeremy Vine, I think, is an extraordinary broadcaster, both in so much as he totally gets everything about the business. He understands TV, he understands radio.
I think that's a show.
Of today, Jeremy Vine is the person that's able to do both, but probably doesn't realise how good he is at both. And in the old days, of course, we've had other people that have been brilliant on radio, and they've been desperate to get them on the TV. Jimmy Young is a good example. Jimmy Young was a brilliant radio broadcaster, and they tried so many. I remember being at Radio Air, and they gave Yorkshire Television was next door, and they gave Jimmy Young a TV program, and he couldn't do TV. You know, and I'm not being rude or cruel or whatever. It just wasn't for him. And yet there's other people. I remember when I was at Radio City on a Thursday, Keith Chegwin, who's, remember Swap Shop on a Saturday morning, you know, Noel Edmonds. Keith Chegwin, who's a Liverpool boy, he used to come up from London on a Thursday to record a one-hour show for radio. This is about to say about Radio City. They so got it. And they brought Keith Chegwin up on a Thursday. He used to record his radio show for a Sunday morning. Then he used to go back to London. So on a Saturday morning, he was on somewhere in the country doing swaps. On Sunday morning, he was on Radio City. And he could do both. And he was a natural TV person, and he was natural on the radio as well. You know, I haven't seen Keith for many years, but he was a real joker at the time, a real joker.
So that's it, Cheggers on City this Sunday morning at 9 o'clock.
I used to have a bit of banter with Peter Tate, because when I was at Radio Air, we used to have this handover, because he did Breakfast, I did Mid-Morning. And that became a little bit legendary, you know, as legendary as banter can at 9 o'clock in the morning in Leeds. But it happened by accident.
And another picture tomorrow night, round about the same time. Please don't say anything, because anything you do is likely to get attention. Thank you. Anything
How
you
are
say
you this evening?
Very
anyway.
Well indeed, thank you.
Yeah, jolly good. Well, I hope you've taken your smalls off that washing line anyway. That's
worry
for
not.
Sure.
Worry not.
I do worry about you. The headline for the next 24 hours.
And the thing
hours,
with Paul really happened by accident. It happened long before I came to Hull. It was when I was in Leeds, and at lunchtimes or whatever. He was a cheeky chappy. He was very young then. And I used to sort of have a little joke with him. And then it got a student following at lunchtime and was popular, and you knew you had something. And when I was asked to come to Hull, of course, I was gutted, because that was going to stop. And I didn't want that. And I remember saying, again, this visionary that we had in Helen Thomas, who was, again, you know, ahead of the curve. And this was my idea. I want Paul to do the weather, but he'll have to do the weather in the middle of the programme, because at the end of the programme, he'll be doing the weather in Leeds. But he does it on the line from Leeds. And they said, oh, no, you can have your own weather forecast. No, so I don't want that. I'd like him to do it in the middle. They agreed to that. And here we are all these years later. It's the only region that has its weather forecast in the middle of the programme. Purely and simply so we can have Paul do it. So it's, you know, you watch any other region, you go to any other part of the country, and the weather forecast is right at the end. Ours is in the middle. But we do things differently in Hull, and don't analyse it, just accept something if it works. But the one thing that I have learnt, you know, like I hinted a few minutes ago, is that you can be okay at your job, or you can, but you're only as good as the visionaries and the people around you that will give you the license to be able to perform, or give you the license to be able to have an idea. Or, as one of my big bosses here said to me about 3 weeks ago, have the license to fail. And too often, just recently, that's been taken away, hasn't it? Where you know, everything's got to work straight away. And I notice again, the luxury of the BBC is able to experiment and do slightly different things, because we've got the channels and we've got the skill. You know, I was watching Trainspotting live on the TV a couple of weeks ago.
I'm in Clapham Junction, the biggest interchange in the country. Over the course of the next hour, more than 160 trains are going to go through the station. I've got my notebook, and I'm going to bag as many as possible.
Nowhere else would somebody have sat down in a room and said, let's do this with three eccentric characters, let's do it live, let's do it where there are not too many trains, let's use mobile phones. And it was compulsive viewing. And somewhere in the BBC, and maybe you can find them and tell them of this recording, somewhere in the BBC is a genius who came up with that idea. I went to the Antiques Roadshow on Sunday, to the recording of the Antiques Roadshow. And I watched creativity from BBC people there at a level which, again, you think, thank God we've got these people, because they were so good. And in the radio world, still, people coming up with ideas and making radio for people that you just desperately want to listen to. And you need those people in the world to keep us fresh and keep those ideas coming.
Tune in to your radio. It's time for the Peter Levy Show. Topics and news and interviews. Peter Levy.
I've got here a copy of the Mablethorpe Leader from this morning, the newspaper, and also an email headline here. Celebrity.
Up till very recently, I was doing a radio show every lunchtime on Radio Humberside and Radio Lincolnshire, and again, that was lunchtime, and then in the evening, you know, on the TV, and I did that for 5 or 6 years. I'm having a momentary break from radio at the moment, but it's only lasted a little while, and I don't suppose it will last that much longer, because if you've got radio in your blood, then you want to be able to do it, and you want to be able to be on, as it were. So although I'm not doing any at the moment, it will probably come back. Also, one of the things I'm very interested in is I would love to be able to, not so much run a radio station, but as to be able to put back a little bit of the experience and the love that's been shown to me by these many of those people that have taught me things and stopped me doing things or made me do things or over the years, that you could put back by helping other people. At the moment, there's so many radio stations and there's so many people, but there is not a great training program for helping people. They're either in and thrown in at the deep end, and you see a lot of people sink. You know, there should be more people saying, you know, what if we just did this or we just did that. I'm not talking about here, I'm talking about around the country. That would be good to help people, because when I started, without people like Stuart Francis and all these people when I was 18, 19, saying, you know, it'll be fine, and helping me and telling me the type of things that you should do and shouldn't do, I probably wouldn't have lasted 6 months at Pennine, let alone 4.5 years. You do need those people to help people. And I think sometimes now you see people come in and, you know, they're cast adrift very quickly, and there isn't the training, because everybody's very, very busy, and schedules, and there isn't time to actually nurture these people and help people and spend time with them. You just want to fill a rota, and you need to get these people in. You know, can you do it? Yes, you can do it. Can you be there at 2 o'clock? Yeah. Rather than thinking about is this the right person or whatever.
A group of Flamborough pensioners are celebrating tonight after People Power finally won the day in a row.
I think the thing that I'm most proud of is the two things. What I'm doing now, because it was a gamble to start a new region, it was a gamble to ask me to do it. I was doing daily TV, but not at 6:30 at night. And the fact that we've been able to build an audience and make a successful TV programme with, compared to some regions, a smaller number of people in an area that is so lovely to live and work in. So I think that's, you started a region, you were the first person to present on that programme, you're still doing it 14 years later. So I think that, and I think secondly, starting in commercial radio at Pennine, in the early days of commercial radio where it was suck it and see, and at 19, and actually making some okay radio programmes and actually getting by. So I think the first thing I did and the current thing.
My special guests in the studio are the Bee Gees.
Just to be able to see how this business of ours has changed beyond all recognition. You're recording on a piece of equipment that we all accept now. When I started, I used to have to lift this bloody ewer everywhere I went. I don't know if you remember ewers. Reel to reel, and then the 5-inch reel or whatever it was would get jammed in the top, and then the tape would spool out. You had a aching shoulder because you used to carry it around. And now you see people doing interviews on iPhones and you think, why couldn't I have one of them when I had to go out every single day and do vox pops or do interviews and lug them around with the ewer, and then it would jam, and then the battery would run out and all the rest of it. And how it's changed.